Thank you very much. I think the statement just made shows to what productive and renewing thoughts reading the State of the World 2005 may give rise to. That I found particularly useful going through the book. I must confess I haven't read it all, but leafed through it. And I noted down 10 points which I would like to submit to you. They are somewhat disorganized, but I think they may be relevant thoughts about policy and conclusions to be drawn from the material in this report. First of all, it is very clear that an awful amount is to be done in the field by governments, business, non-governmental organizations, private citizens. And the question is always, given the resources and attention and time we have, how we order priorities. I would like to submit to you that there are two quite easy but often neglected ways to order priorities in a rational fashion. First of all, to focus on possibilities to reduce avoidable human misery. Philosophers tell us governments cannot make us happy, but at least they can help to reduce avoidable human misery. And if that is the focus of policy, it means that we have to order what we do, where we spend our money and attention on the expected or probable loss of healthy human years. That means fighting diseases which are rampant among young people are more important than fighting diseases which are killing people at the end of their lives. It means that you try to raise life expectancy in as economic a fashion as possible, getting as much humanitarian effect per dollar spent for policy purposes. And that perspective changes the agenda which most governments actually apply, because the agenda is much more set by those risks and those problems which receive a lot of media attention and receive, for psychological reasons, a lot of attention. It is with governments as with people. We focus often on the wrong problems, while there are problems that don't receive much attention, but actually threaten us much more. So if we apply as our focus probable loss of healthy human years and effectiveness per unit of expense, I think we come to a number of policy conclusions which seem disjointed when I present them to you, but to my analysis, they are logical. Number one would be to provide then for as little money as possible, almost free, condoms all over the world, and give free sex education and family planning services. That, by definition, helps to reduce avoidable human misery at many different levels in the future. And those who advocate against sexual education and female rights and female autonomy and basic education for girls and the free provision of condoms to men take an awful amount of responsibility upon themselves, those who torpedo international programs in this regard. That's my first remark. My second remark is, it seems to me that it's of great importance, at a very different level, to encourage brokering peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Because that is the clue, I think, to many other problems in the world. It won't solve a lot of problems, but it will help to avoid a lot of waste and human suffering in the field of international affairs. A brokered peace between Israel and the Palestinians will require enforcement by an international coalition, because we have seen repeatedly that peace agreements made between the leaders there won't stick, as the leaders run the risk of being killed. It needs an international coalition, perhaps led by NATO and strengthened by other countries, non-NATO members, not led by the United Nations, because the United Nations is not the proper organization to do heavy peacekeeping work. It can do light peacekeeping work, but heavy peacekeeping work has to be mandated by the Security Council, but implemented by stronger organizations. My fourth remark is, again, on an entirely different level, looking at where are the risks that are most likely to cause enormous human suffering and lead to loss of healthy human years. My fourth recommendation then is to our governments to stock up very soon on antiviral medicine against bird flu. Bird flu or related dangerous forms of influenza may kill people by the millions, perhaps by the tens of millions, particularly as it can spread very rapidly in large slum cities and as it has developed in South Asia. It seems here too, with relatively little expense, one can prevent a lot of avoidable human misery. My fifth remark is of a similar nature. Provide free malaria prevention measures. I need not dwell on this further. I'll keep my points very brief because otherwise I take up too much time. Let me see, what's my counting? My sixth remark is get vast resources for a number of these international programs by a very simple measure, which has been discussed already for a long time, but governments cannot agree on it. Put a simple tax on airlines and air tickets to finance international programs. It's a very simple measure. It would generate enormous amounts of money. And by starting with a small amount, a dollar per ticket or something like that, you at least get the principle going and later on you can raise it. Nowadays, of course, airlines scream that their competitive position is being undermined, but that is, of course, not the case if all governments decide more or less together to do this. It would yield tremendous resources. And as was said by Mr. Renner before, the question is not that there is lack of resources in the world to tackle the problems. The question is we have wrong priorities and we spend money on different subjects. My seventh remark, related, a good source of funding, is vastly reduce all space programs. Some of them are of interest for scientific reasons, but many of them are not so, although they are defended on the basis of spin-off for technology elsewhere to be used for civilian purposes. I think you would find that technology much faster if you didn't go through space, but try to find out here right on Earth how to design new technologies more directed and not as a side product. My eighth remark is the World Health Organization should be seen as the most important international security agency. Without a functioning World Health Organization, you will not have the proper and effective and rapid action to stop the spread of SARS and bird flu and related future pandemics. It may look silly to define the World Health Organization as an international security agency, but it is if you define security as human security. And then I come to a very debatable ninth point, and that is that the risk of biological weapons particularly genetically altered diseases, which completely disturb human immunity and cannot be handled by people with their biological immunity. The risk of biological weapons may be very much underestimated. And it is very difficult to solve it, as the Biological Weapons Treaty has no provision for inspection and control. We all have to believe that governments which signed this treaty stick to it. It seems to me it is, because it lacks control mechanisms, when governments and some of our governments discuss the possible need in the future of preemptive actions to ward off dangers, this is the most likely area where preemptive action may be required. I know this is very debatable, but the risk is really, I fear, that tens of millions of people might fall victims to even things like technical mistakes with biological weapons which are being experimented with by certain governments. And then my ninth remark, which also won't make me very popular, is the following. We live in a what we may call a uni-multipolar world. Unipolar from a military point of view. The United States by far and vast is the biggest military actor. But multipolar economically. I need not dwell on it, we all know it. This uni-multipolar world is rapidly developing in probably a tripolar or quadrupolar world. And I mean by that a world in which the big powers are China, India, the United States, and perhaps the European Union. I say perhaps if the European Union gets its act together, if the European Union decides to have foreign policy on the basis of majority voting, which for many years to come it will not be able to agree on. So therefore I say tripolar or perhaps quadrupolar world. In such a world divided by big powers, three or four, one should not have the illusion that we'll have an effective unitary world governance. This tripolar or quadrupolar system will continue to divide the United Nations very strongly. And that means that we have to be realistic and not only pray for a stronger United Nations, but look for different ways to strengthen global governance at different levels. And one of the most effective levels, which is also advocated at the end of this book, is international public policy networks, where national and international organizations, governments, non-governmental and business, academics, through the means of conferences, telephone calls, internet, and other modern means of communication, encourage each other to do like-minded, to undertake like-minded actions and influence their own governments. We have seen how effective this can be in the field of the banning small landmines, which was basically a movement started by one lady. This book at the end also gives some examples of other international public policy networks. More of that is possible, and it gives me more hope than waiting for the United Nations Security Council to get its act together, because for many times it won't. Thank you.